This is Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast. Today, joined in full by our board of directors, who will not, however, be contributing verbally to the podcast. Today, we're just talking about the TV show Severance, whose first season came out 3 years ago, 2022, and whose second season has just emerged now. I'm Mark Lintzenmeyer, carefully partitioned off from my previous life as a corporate drone.
This is Al Baker, a pale imitation of Charlie Kaufman, if there ever was one.
Ooh, wow.
I'm Sarah Lynn Bruck, and I most take to heart Lumen's 10th core principle, there ain't no party like a waffle party.
This is Lawrence Ware coming to you from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and I am not an innie, nor am I an outie.
They never show, I guess actually they do have, they look at people's belly buttons at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, that was because they're looking for the pouches, but I was thinking, like, wait, is there cloning going on here? If they don't have any belly button, does that mean that they're produced? Because I didn't know what the limits are in this show. There's so much of mystery that, you know, also there's aliens or something. You know, who knows?
There was clearly not aliens.
Are you saying your experience of watching this show is being presented with more and more questions and fewer answers?
Well, that's why I was thinking, actually, you know, normally we wait for a show to be done. For this show, we waited so long. I resisted season one, even though I know Sarah Lynn was very excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, yeah, let's just wait for it to come out. That's more our thing. Let's wait till it's done. But I feel like this is a mystery box show. It's like Lost.
Mm. It is.
And if we wait until season five or whenever it's done, it's going to be disappointing. People will have lost interest by that point. Let's strike while it's like actually a significant thing in the culture.
It is a lot like Lost. And I love the first season, but the second season just reminded me of Lost the whole way through from beginning to end. And I felt like, spoiler alert, I found the second season intensely frustrating.
Really?
I really, really loved the first one. It set up a load of really cool stuff. I thought the tone was great. I thought it was funny as hell. I thought it was setting up a load of really interesting ideas. But the second season felt I was bored through most of it. I was confused, like, and not in a fun way through most of it too. And I don't feel remotely satisfied by pretty much anything that the second season did.
That I don't think was a spoiler, the fact that you didn't like it that much. I think we can talk in generalities. In terms of the actual thing that is given away in the finale, let's wait until, you know, a half hour into this discussion to feel that.
Okay. Sure.
But I actually found that pretty satisfying. It might have been ad hoc. Like, did they know when they set up the people in this mythical hell-like office are dealing with some weird-looking numbers that some of them, they feel scary, so they use a trackball and put them in a box, or they feel pleasurable. This is just for people who haven't watched the show. And it's really that image of these people in this vast white room who don't know who they are and they don't know what they're doing, that this is just what the show is all about. That's the primary image. Anything else on that is, I think you're saying it's too much, Al, that it can't actually support anything else. This should be a painting rather than a show. It should be a short. They might not have known what the numbers were at the time, but I found the explanation for what it was at least link things together. It was not out of the blue.
I know that we're talking about the show before it has fully run its course, and it is a risk. I actually really enjoyed the second season. We all know that. How much I love the first season. This is the show that I have loved, I think, the most since Succession. I think this is the sort of the next thing that I've been obsessing over in the same way. And I really liked the second season, but knowing that it was part of a fuller story arc. You could argue that it's kind of the muddy middle, but for me, I thought that Dan Erickson, the writer, has done a really, really good job of kind of delving into each one of the characters. This season, we got to get to see some of their past trauma and understand who they are. And I still am so high on this show. I absolutely love this show still so much, even though second season wasn't perfect. But you know what, though? First season wasn't perfect either.
No. So my problem with the second season is that...
You're so mad. You're so mad, Al.
I am kind of mad. The first season wrote a really big check and built up all of these mysteries. And you're absolutely right. This is the second season of however many seasons that they're going to go. And we can't expect them to answer all of the questions that they set up in the first season in the second season. But The big reveal...
Don't say what the big reveal is.
But not yet. But let me just say that the character work was interesting. So the episodes that focused on some of the characters, that was interesting. That was cool. I like these characters. It's good to see more about them. But I don't know yet what all that was in service of. And this is the thing that reminded me of Lost, right? Because similarly, Lost, I haven't watched Lost all the way through, but Lost also has like these good character-driven episodes. We learn a bit of backstory. But ultimately, I mean, spoiler alert for people who haven't seen Lost, the overarching story wasn't rich enough, interesting enough, deep enough.
I agree with that.
To have gone through the effort of exposing all this stuff about all these characters and have dived into all these character backstories. The point of going into a deep dive on a character in a show like this is to reveal something that's important to understand, like, the overarching mystery. And it's not clear to me that that's what was going on. It felt like a lot of the time when we were looking at the characters, we were looking at the characters for the sake of the characters. Mm-hmm. And what has annoyed me about this season of Severance is it felt like the show was saying, you don't really need us to progress much on the mystery. You don't really need to know what Lumen is even doing. So we had the specific reveal at the end, but we still have like a bunch of questions about what even is the business that Lumen is in, right? No one knows. What's their evil plan? Because it still seems like their evil plan is just to kind of be evil for the sake of it. Why do they have this weird cult-like sensibility running through the whole thing? And even, I mean, it could also be that I wasn't paying enough attention, because as I said, another problem with the second season for me was that it was confusing to the point of boredom for a lot of the episodes. So I could just have not been paying close enough attention. But yeah, I don't, like, the why is still really missing. So we've got a lot of facts about how a lot of these characters like came to be and their life in the outside world. But the show didn't do really anything. I don't think the show did anything to connect that with the mysteries that it set up in the first season. And that was what was kind of frustrating to me.
Hi, guys. My name is Lawrence Ware.
Hi, Lawrence.
And I'm a part of the podcast. Can I talk now? Am I allowed?
Okay. Please do, Lawrence.
Give you the floor, Lawrence.
Although we should say that right before we started, you're like, I don't know how we're going to talk about this.
Well, I didn't know how we were going to talk about it. But now that we're talking, I have an idea. Okay. Al, I get what you're saying. Okay, let's back up. I have a lot of issues with the show because having a 3-year break between the first season and the second season sets up for people to be very, very confused about what the show is about.
Yeah.
Now, that's a structural behind the scenes issue that I have with the show. Now, into the actual show, here's what I'm hearing from Al. The first season sets up a really good mystery and it sets up a really good, intriguing idea about what's going on. I think what Al wanted was more answers to the questions posed in that first season. What this second season did is it focused more on the characters and it fleshed out the characters more. And I strongly suspect that in the third season, whenever we get it, it better not take 3 years to get it. But whenever we get that third season, we'll get some of the answers that Al is asking for. Now, we got some answers. And I think that the second season is not paced particularly well. Like, for example, the 8th episode, I could have passed on. Like, that could have been a monologue or something. Like, I didn't need that full episode about what happened in that 8th episode.
Is that the finale or what? That's the second last?
No. The finale is the 10th episode.
Oh, sweet vitriol.
Okay. So, yes, Harmony's backstory.
Yeah. I could have passed on that.
Yes, that one and the backstory of the relationship that actually sets up what Janma is doing, mm-hmm. which is essential. But yeah, those were the ones that I felt were like, oh, we're really trying to be arty.
Exactly.
Let's show, you know, waves over cliffs in this town that has been decimated by, I guess, Lumen coming in and having a factory and then pulling out. And I actually watched both of those twice because I was sort of, I felt like I wasn't paying attention the first time and that I had to, was going to have to talk about this. And so I.
Yes. I watched them 3 times and I still... those episodes, I didn't love them. The pacing of the show was kind of all over the place. But that finale that we just watched, I would argue, is probably a masterpiece. Like, it's really, really good. The tension's really good. It has echoes of horror in certain areas. Like, it's really good. And it sets up a very interesting philosophical question. But I'm sure we'll get to it. I don't want to reveal too much because Mark is about to tell me to stop. Okay, so.
Well, I think that the premise of there being innies and out, I think people must know this by now. But right, the whole point is you go to work and you're cut off by this severance procedure from knowing what the person did at work.
Yes.
So you have your outie, the person who's in the outside world, you have your innie, and they, the outies all think that like, well, I work is boring. I don't want to have to sit through this. I could just have all weekend, all evening, all the time. And that's great. But they don't know how well their innies are being treated.
Right.
And they in some cases, they explicitly don't care because the innie is, so that's, yes, that's the question. Is the innie a person?
Exactly.
John Locke's one of the most famous accounts of personal identity is continuity of memory. So on that, even though they have all the same dispositions, they have all the same biology, but the innie and the outie have different continuity of memory. So they're different people. And so there's a question though, like, well, can you, as this character does at the beginning and as our protagonist is doing at this point in the show, reintegrate so that you actually become a whole person? It's all these great philosophical questions, you know, that are, we've seen in cloning and teleportation. And so it's just another variation off of that, which is one of the most fun parts of the show for sure.
And I think that the finale that we got was good for this season. This season was all about characters and their choices and character development. Mm-hmm. And the finale centered on character choices. And it centered on making Mark have to make, did I say Mark? Is his name Mark?
Yeah.
I don't remember his name.
Yes.
Mark S. I wasn't sure if I was thinking about the Mark in the character or the actual Mark. But this Mark as well, having to make a choice between two women. That was the, anyway. So the finale centered on that question. And I think that the finale was applicable to the season that we got. Season wasn't perfect, but it was applicable to the season. Now, what Al wants is larger answers about the overall project of the company. And so since we did not get those answers, because there are a lot of still questions there, since we did not get those answers, that's why I think Al might not have been satisfied both with the finale and the season. But that's me kind of reading the tea leaves here when it comes to Al. But I thought that this season did a good job of zeroing in on the characters. We got to know who the characters are. Our hearts were broken, we know, with some of them. John Turturro, we'll see what happens with that guy. Is that a spoiler? Anyway, we'll see what happens. But ultimately, this season was about the characters. Last season was about the mystery. This season fleshed out the characters within the context of the mystery. And I'm hoping that the next season will now tie all these things together. And maybe the structure of the storytelling might not have been satisfactory for some people, but I deeply, deeply enjoyed it. Although the show was extremely expensive and I didn't see all the money they spent on the screen.
Except in the animatronic Kier, right?
Animatronics, yeah.
I can maybe put a finer point in my criticism, which is that it isn't that I didn't enjoy the character work and it isn't that I didn't think that there was good progress made on the mystery and all of that kind of stuff. It's just that they didn't seem to have a lot to do with one another. So I really enjoyed, for instance, that episode where we had Irving having his dinner with the outie Christopher Walken and the outie Denethor from Lord of the Rings.
Bert.
Yes, the newly cast John Noble, who is, I think, not the same guy as appeared as...
I was wondering why I didn't recognize him from when he was in the previous season.
I mean, they just like saw him through a window in the previous season, so it's not like a big deal, but still. You would have been like, oh, that's Denethor!
So that was a really great 45 minutes of TV or however long it was. But maybe my problem is just in the structure of the season, because the first third of the season, we had them kind of half dealing with the fallout of the end of the last season. And there was that whole like camping trip expedition thing. And then Irving, can we do minor spoilers for the season?
I think season? Sure. We're now halfway through the season.
Guys, if you're listening and you don't want to be spoiled, watch the show.
Yeah,
the show is a really good show.
Right. I mean, watch the show.
I would strongly advise you to watch the show.
You're firmly in the demo. Go watch the show.
Al is not saying that the show is terrible. He's just saying that he has some quibbles with the show. So strongly advise you guys to watch the show. Sarah, do you agree? Watch the show.
I agree. Watch the show.
Mark, do you agree? Watch the show.
I do agree. And I might say, like we did with, it seems like we're getting a lot of the same vibes as with The Bear here of like, that was barely a season. Just wait till the next season comes out and watch 2 and 3 together.
Oh my gosh. You're so right, Mark. Yeah.
Yeah, you are right. You are right.
The elephant in the room. I mean, Al said it. It's not even just a confusion. I think Lawrence, when we were last week in our after talk or whatever, you said it might just be actively boring season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sarah, it just cannot understand why we would possibly say that.
No.
It's not. Go watch the show. We're about to spoil it, guys. You're now in spoiler territory. Al, go.
At a spoiler-laden point, which is that then they go on this camping trip and Irving dies. And that's supposed to be a big moment, but it kind of fell flat because it wasn't clear to me at that point what the central tension, I guess, of the season was building up to be. And so then we had the episode with Irving and Christopher Walken and everything else at the end. And then it ended up being about the ways in which innies can love, or like what love means to severed people, and also what theological consequences of severance might be. And that's great if it comes at the end of a season where these themes have been clearly set up, but it didn't. It came at the end of the first half of the season where it wasn't clear what this was about. So this is why it felt boring and confusing. And in a show like this, that reads mostly to me as irritating, because this show sets itself up as a clever show. I made my Charlie Kaufman crack at the beginning, because in the same way as Charlie Kaufman's work, this show is telegraphing to anyone who watches it, we are super smart and we are like posing interesting and important and difficult questions, and we're going to explore them together through this highbrow television. And you're writing that, and they decided to write that big check, so I'm going to judge them on the level that they're playing at. And it just wasn't clear to me in the second the first season, it was very clear to me what they were setting up and why, and what they were trying to say and what they were trying to play with. And in the second season, it just wasn't. It felt like it was all over the place. And that's why the finale in itself was satisfying, but it also made me think, like, is there any good reason why the rest of the season couldn't have been this tight or this good or this clearly relevant to the show?
I agree. It was definitely saggy. Like, this felt two episodes too long. If they had like tightened it up and done what, 8 episodes instead of 10, you know, it reminds me very much of a show that I finished, but I didn't love the second season, was The Night Agent. I don't even know if you guys watched that show. It's on Netflix. Whereas the first season was a really tight, good 10 episodes of really good mystery. The second season dragged, and it's because they went for the 10 episodes instead of the 8 episodes. By the way, Night Agent, one of the top shows on Netflix. You guys should probably watch that. Anyway, but the point nevertheless is that it just needed more tightening. You know, it was too self-indulgent. It was too artsy. It was too many shots of waves hitting rocks and too many shots of like interesting framing.
Okay.
You know, I listen, I'm a cinephile. I like that kind of stuff. I like good framing. I love Lawrence of Arabia. I like that kind of stuff. But it needs to be in the service of a story. And it felt like this season was too much of like artistic framing for the service of artistic framing instead of artistic framing for the service of the story. And so that's, now I'm not saying I didn't like the show, Sarah. I'm saying that it just needed to be tightened. And that's okay. That is a legitimate criticism to say that the show was a little saggy, because you know that there were 2 episodes of this season that did not need to be episodes. They could have been a flashback that was 5 minutes long or a monologue. It could have been anything else. It didn't need to be 2 episodes.
Okay.
It is a shame that we're not recording video for this show anymore.
She was so upset with me. She's so animated.
This is like one of those presidential debates of the person who's not talking.
I'm so glad we're not filming. I really disagree with you guys this week. One thing that I love about this show is that it's unpredictable, that I don't know where it's going. And so with that attitude, I just meet the show where it is, and I am delightfully surprised at where it takes me every single week.
Are we going to have to mute your mic, Lawrence?
Sorry,
you got to let the other person talk.
I know what you're doing.
Sorry, just a debate callback.
But one thing that I loved about the character studies is that it did actually, for me, answered a lot of open questions from the first season, in that, what does it feel like to be severed? What does it mean when your outie tells your innie that I am a person, you are not a person? That was so loaded for me. I couldn't stop thinking about that. And what I thought they did brilliantly in the second season is they really kind of explored that, you know? And so by the end, we are driving toward this finale, this almost movie length finale, which I agree with you, Lawrence, was absolutely genius. I love the ending. But I thought the entire season was just moving forward toward that ending. And it was based on the character work, based on what it felt like to be separated in those ways.
It was a movie length. It was like 76 minutes. So that was a pretty long episode.
Mm-hmm. And it went so fast.
The pacing of the finale was so good that it made me upset that the pacing of many other episodes in the season were not as good. That is what frustrated me. Even though you want to receive a show as it's given and not have any criticism, and you want to be nice, mm-hmm. and you want to be kind.
That's not true.
I'm telling you, like this, you are I'm nice, Sarah. You are nice to a fault. But I'm telling you, it needed to be tighter, because the entire season could have been like that finale. Because the finale, I think, is very much a very near masterpiece, but it's the pacing, it's the intentionality of the shots. Everything is coming together to tell this tight story in the finale, whereas the season meandered. It just meandered. It was good, but it meandered. It was meandering. Sorry, Sarah, go for it.
Even if you argue that there were some parts where it was saggy, I still thought that there was a nice thread there throughout the second season.
They should have put more thread in those pants so it wasn't sagging then, because it was way too saggy. It was too saggy.
It just needed a belt.
Well, let's talk about some of the individual themes. Like, I really like everybody's forgetting a character. So, Irv, who's the fourth one?
Irving, Dustin, Helly Dustin? R, and Mark. Dustin, the black guy. Dustin.
No.
That was not his name.
That was not his name. Dylan.
His name
was
Dylan.
Dylan. Dylan. Sorry, Dylan. Dylan. Sorry, my bad. Dustin's my cousin. Hi, Dustin. How you doing?
I really like the Dylan plot.
Me too.
They had this rule of you just can't, as an innie, know about your outie. And because they use the overtime continuum, then he gets to see that he has a child. And this like really messes him up that he was the top worker before that. And he just now hates everything and bites his boss at some point. So now we're going to let him have a visitation from his wife. And his wife likes the more innocent, innie version of him better than the jaded, pressured, downtrodden by the world outer version.
Was that an affair? Was that an affair? Like, did you guys read that as an affair?
That's an excellent question. Yeah.
Because that was one of the ways of asking, is this a separate person? And I read it as, no, actually.
Really?
This is one of the places where it's absolutely okay for the wife to be into both of them, because they are physically the same body. They have the same personality, ultimately.
I would personally hit myself if that happened. I don't know, man. That is.
It asks also that question, like, who we are at work versus who we are at home, you know?
Absolutely. You're right about that.
And I loved the fact that Dylan's innie, he just has this confidence in himself that he doesn't have in the outside world. He is a go-getter. He has the most number of finger traps than anybody in that office. He really kind of has this very clear sense, or he thinks this very clear sense of himself that his outie just doesn't. And I totally get why that would feel attractive to his wife.
I really wanted to talk about this, because this, again, is one of the reasons I strongly preferred the first season to the second, because this is one of the things that I think the first season set up really, really beautifully, is leveraging the severance metaphor to describe how we are at work versus how we are the rest of the time, and how this does create a kind of bifurcated personality in the actual real-ass world that we live in. One of my favorite things about the first season was how they kind of milked that for humor. So how infantilized all the innies are in Lumen, like all the waffle party stuff, you know, the wellness session, which is so fatuous, and all of the rewards, all the way that management talks to you, it's all so completely infantilizing. And what's wonderful is because the innies don't know anything else. They don't know any better. They, you know, take it all in their stride and they take it as the whole of their personality. Whereas, you know, in the real world, when we have to deal with being treated in unnervingly similar fashion in various professional environments, we have to compare that to the way that we view ourselves as fully autonomous people in the real world. And, you know, it grates on us. But this is a lovely way of just showing how all that is ridiculous and absurd. And I guess the way that the innies are set up in the first season, like, innies are ideal capitalist workers. So even though they're not, you know, slavish drones, they're still autonomous people, they are still nonetheless bought in to the way that things are done And the fact that, you know, you've got to do things according to the handbook, you've got to do things according to the teachings of Keir, you've got to be happy when you get your waffle party, all of that kind of stuff. And while I will grant that it was an interesting direction for them to take, doing the visitation stuff and that interesting attraction that Dylan's outie wife has to the innie, it was a change of direction, I guess, is what was interesting. And I wanted it to explore more of the stuff that they'd set up in the first. It felt like they left a lot of the more interesting stuff behind in the first season, I guess, is another one of the things that I was disappointed in. It seemed like there was a lot more to mine there, and they've moved on directly to like problematizing the fictional metaphysics that they've set up instead of using it to continue to explore the stuff that I thought that they were satirizing. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So what's a loose end for you from season one?
Like, I mean, so there's all the ones that are just stupid mystery box loose ends, like the goats and like, and what is Lumen actually doing and why is it set up like Scientology and why have they been like allowed to get away with clearly a bunch of other shady shit before they invented the severance procedures.
Which I think they are getting into, but because again, there's something very primal about this presentation of these four characters in the all-white room in the endless hallways, that it's just this idealized setting of hell. I mean, that I hadn't noticed the episode titles, but I rewatched season one, and the fact that the pilot is called Good News About Hell, and then they talk about this as if the people are serving them up the tortures or, you know, what they do to discipline them. Yeah, they start off season two of like, oh, this is a new regime. We're not going to discipline you in this way. And I guess it's pretty closely revealed that, like, no, actually, there's been no massive reform, even if the word has gotten out about severance a little bit, that it's just more subtle, right? The tortures are not going to be overt. I don't know. Is that one of the things? Because it does seem like there was a practical problem in how do you discipline these characters that now we're going to sort of sidestep because we're just taking a different approach. We're not going to try to discipline them anymore. We're going to give them choices. We're going to do. So it was an interesting change, but it wasn't like fully exploring the original premise.
I think that helps clarify my disappointment slightly, because on the one hand, you can't stay in the single white room forever. Like, that setup isn't going to support six seasons of TV. On the other hand, that setup was so perfect. And clearly that was the seed of the idea, the visual, like whatever the core of the visual imagination of the creators of the show, like the image of them in the room and this kind of perfect satire of white collar office work was really core. And so I guess, yeah, you've got to leave that at some point because the story and the plot and the characters we've got to develop. But on the other hand, in doing so, you have left behind, in my view, the most compelling stuff in the show. Whenever I'm disappointed by long-running TV shows, and it's always a similar kind of pattern, they set up something brilliant in the first season and they just can't quite pay it off in the later seasons. Mm-hmm. And sometimes mm-hmm. that's just because they didn't think far enough ahead. And in others, it's often just that the premise is enough to support one absolutely stellar season of TV and is not enough to support six or seven stellar seasons of TV, because you've got to take different directions and they're less perfect.
It's tough when you have so many open-ended questions, and then once you answer one, it opens up five more questions, you know what I mean? Which I find really exciting. I know why someone might find that frustrating, but I find all of those questions really exciting, knowing that there's more to come. There's going to be at least one more season of this. It'd be interesting if they could close this out in three seasons.
I would prefer that. And I think behind the scenes stuff, like, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but like, it took them a very long time to bring the second season to fruition because they had to start, then had to stop. They changed showrunners midstream. There's just a lot that was going on behind the scenes, and that may have led to some of the things that we saw in season two. Now, I will admit, though, I really enjoy what I got in season two, despite my fight with Sarah a few minutes ago. I really enjoy what I got in season two. But I think that what Al is saying is significant, because there are many shows that have a wonderful first season and then they just kind of drag off. I think Lost is an example of that, where you have a wonderful first season and then just because you cannot continue that momentum for five, six seasons. For me, I want a Succession-like show, a show that has a clear beginning, a clear ending. You know where you're going. And so you don't feel the need to fill this void and go on. It's like watching anime and having all these filler episodes, right? You don't want that. You want a tight season, a tight show, and you just get in and you get out and you leave disappointed because you wanted more, but you're happy with what you got. That's what I want from this show.
You mentioned mysteries, Sarah Lynn, being excited about when more mysteries are brought up. And I love a juicy mystery being set up. But the key issue here, I think, is about trust.
Mm.
If a showrunner is giving me a mystery and I trust that showrunner to pay that mystery off, then it's exciting. If a showrunner is giving me a mystery and I have a suspicion that the reason they're giving me a mystery instead of an answer is because they haven't been able to figure out the satisfactory answer yet, then it's a drag. That's why, Lawrence, you asked why I hadn't watched Lost. That's why I didn't watch Lost, because I watched the first few episodes and I thought, this guy, J.J. Abrams, cannot possibly know how he's going to pay all this stuff off.
I agree with you.
Does not have a show Bible, that there should be a show Bible that the person wrote in one burst of inspiration and that they then play it out. You know, that's what Robert Jordan in his monumental fantasy series, like that's why they could even finish it after his death, because he had the whole thing mapped out. And it's just a matter of fleshing out the details.
And the reshoots and the change in showrunner of the second episode of season two of Severance for me is a bad sign, because it suggests to me that there isn't a clear roadmap and they were getting themselves into hot water, so they had to change things up. And that really worries me, especially if you're making a consciously intellectual, highfalutin and absurdist show or movie or whatever. Well, actually, this only really happens in TV shows. Then the audience is going to give you a lot of license to introduce weird and inexplicable things. And it's very, very tempting to just bring those in just for a bit of like relief or whatever. But what you're doing is you're always making promises to the audience. And I hate it when showrunners can't keep their promises to the audience, because they ask for so much of your time and attention. And especially in a show like this, when it is confusing, deliberately confusing a lot of the times, and it is promising to say something clever and important. Yeah, I could easily be sitting here in a couple of years eating my words, because they absolutely stick the landing on every point. But I am deeply suspicious. The second season made me deeply suspicious.
Mm.
Okay, I have a question, Al. This is a little bit of a side note, but I think it's relevant here. Do you like David Lynch?
I do not like David Lynch.
That makes sense. Okay, because this reminds me a lot of Twin Peaks, because Twin Peaks is a show that is like this, that is very much a mystery box.
Mm-hmm.
It's very atmospheric. It's very
quirky,
self-indulgent.
Mm-hmm.
And this show, this season in particular, last season, not so much, but this season in particular really reminded me of Twin Peaks, because just some of the weird tangents it would go on. Ben Stiller, who directed a lot of these episodes, certainly was a fan of Twin Peaks. Just watching what he does with his camera, watching what he does with the show. And so if you don't like that absurdism, you don't like Twin Peaks, you don't like David Lynch, I can see why you wouldn't like this. Because Twin Peaks is a show that's very comfortable with asking questions and the answers being strange, weird, or not even answered.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so this is a show that is kind of on that wavelength.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good comparison.
Well, and think how much more boring it could have been if he had really taken the Twin Peaks comparison seriously.
Come on, that, man. Twin Peaks was not very boring.
I'm saying
boring.
There's Twin Peaks,
weird.
The Return, or Walk With Me. There's these scenes that like move so slowly that is like 10 minutes of basically nothing.
Definitely.
Twin Peaks I actually like quite a bit, but David Lynch I'm also deeply suspicious of, mostly because of his film. Like Mulholland Drive, I despise that movie.
I love it. One of my favorite movies of all time. One of my favorite movies of all time.
There is a very particular reason why I despise that movie, because I got the DVD because my A-level, this is my like late high school English teacher, was a big fan and said we had to watch it so we could talk about it.
Your high school English teacher told you to watch that show? What high school did you go to? Whoa!
So I got the DVD and I watched it, and I opened the DVD, and inside the inner sleeve of the DVD were questions from the director. And so here are some questions from the director that if you ask them while you're watching the film will help you understand what's going on in the movie. And I am like, fuck you, David Lynch. You made the movie. If you're doing this, then you are just telling me that the movie that you've made is not doing the job that you set out for the movie to do. So fuck you, David Lynch. I mean, rest in peace. And I loved his June movie.
Wonderful timing on this diatribe.
Yeah, yeah.
The dude is dead, Al. Come on, man. Jesus
Christ. All right, so we're relating this back to Severance because you think that it's doing a similar thing.
So I think Severance is different. It's not like a David Lynch thing, even though clearly inspired. But David Lynch, the weirdness, the absurdism is very formalist, right? It's about how the stuff is made. It's not so much about the substance.
Right.
And I think a better comparison is with Charlie Kaufman, again, maybe Jordan Peele, some of the more like cerebral sci-fi fare. So maybe it's just a case where Severance just is confused or is confusing about what kind of surrealism or absurdism it's going for. But it seemed to me that in the first season, it's setting itself up as we are absurdist and we are surrealist, but we are absurdist and surrealist in service of making like interesting points or like mounting some kind of argument or setting up an interesting metaphor, not just for like formalistic, we enjoy playing with absurdism kind of reasons. And that's why I think it's legitimate for me to get annoyed about it.
May I suggest to the filmmakers to encourage various animators to do something like the Animatrix did for Matrix 1 to connect season 1 to season 2 and fill in these backstory. Maybe we got to wait for another couple seasons of the show to come out, but like have stuff about the origins of Kier and have, there's lots of mythology and things that could be explored in a fun way by, you know, different filmmakers coming in. Okay, there. Yes. Fan fiction. Yeah. I had thought this would be a workplace comedy.
It is.
That this would be our workplace comedy episode. I think this is what we discussed. You know, apparently The Office is being rebooted, so we can just discuss that again. But like, I thought one of our major themes here would be, is this indicative? Does this capture the nightmare of being in a white collar environment? And I think all of us, well, I don't know. I spent 6 years in a straight office environment between grad school and then
really
doing this work from home and all this podcasting stuff. And that was actually with a pretty good company that like let you wear things like, right. One of the obviously absurd things. Why are these people who are never seen by anyone wear suits? What is it that they're doing that requires them to be all fancy? Oh, it's a professional environment. We want to make sure but they've even conditioned these people. So they're not coming in with preconceptions of what a professional environment is. They could just have them all wear uniforms. They could have them all wear t-shirts. They could have them wear anything. But that's the kind of thing that like I would judge an actual company by, of how stupid are they? Are they making all the people who never see customers dress in fancy suits or not? And the software company that I was working for did not. And so that was at least one thing in their favor. But there were a number of still cult-like things about it that I think this is just exaggerating to a ridiculous degree in a fun way.
Their costumes, right? One thing that I loved about this second season was Milchick's character arc and about and about how being at work is a form of a big form of code switching. And I love seeing him. He comes to work. He is absolutely in his costume with his rolled up shirts and, you know, nice slacks, you know, and then we learn that he rides a motorcycle and he wears these cool leather jackets outside of the office. I loved the fact that even the non-severed employees are also severed in a way, you know, they have to separate themselves.
In some way, yeah. I mean, I thought that this show, this season, was a lot of things. It was hard sci-fi. It was a really funny at times workplace comedy. It was a wonderful satire about work. It was an interesting examination of relationships and what is permissible in relationships and what is cheating, what's love. I thought that this did a lot of really interesting things all together. And I think that it melded it all together relatively well. I also felt it was kind of scary and horrifying, some of the things that were happening. I thought this entire season, I mean, as I've said, it was not perfect, but not every season of television needs to be perfect. Sometimes you just want a show that's really, really good, really, really well done, really thought out, posing interesting questions. And then for my taste, since I am a philosopher, a lot of really interesting philosophical, like we haven't even touched on some of the really deep, interesting philosophical ideas.
Yeah, let's go. Give us another one.
You know, so like the severing of identity, who are you really? Is the any you? Is the out of you? Is it some melding between the two? When you reintegrate, are you becoming your fullest self yet again? Or are you becoming a completely different person that is comprised of the inside ideas and the outside ideas? Questions about love. Like, I just, is this a good way to do work, to do life? You know, is it ethical for a person to say, I'm going to sever my work identity and only exist in this outward place? Like, a lot of interesting ideas were being explored here. I thought this season was really, really good. I loved it.
Just on that question, one of the super interesting things, I think, again, the first season did, but this isn't me beating up on the second season again. But when Mark S. is confronted about the fact that Lumen is a shady organization, I think this is in the first few episodes, mm-hmm. and he has this, like, basically the untenability of being able to morally sever yourself, I guess, the fact, because he wanted to live his outie life mm-hmm. and not have to concern himself with work at all, and not have to concern himself with what Lumen, that he felt that whatever Lumen got up to, like, was really none of his business, and he didn't have to care. And I thought that was a really interesting way of setting up the art, like just showing how untenable it is to say, well, this is just work. This is just business. I don't need to like worry so much about that. That's not who I really am.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's being so lavishly rewarded in having a dreary one bedroom, shitty apartment.
Yeah. Well, we see that also illustrated with Bert's character. We learn in the second season that his outie may not be such a great guy, mm-hmm. but his innie, his husband and specifically, was so concerned about that. And he's religious. His husband is religious, and he wanted to make sure that Bert had a chance at going to heaven, which I thought, oh my God.
I loved it. I loved it. Yeah.
I love that question. I'm like, I don't know. Does he get to go to heaven? I don't know.
And that's a very interesting theological question, because I'm telling you, this show has so many ideas, and it may have too many ideas, honestly, but it has so many interesting ideas, because you have to ask the question, this company enters into the world and does all these interesting things. What does that do to the theological ideas surrounding the company? What does that do to the philosophical ideas, you know, out in the world? What does that do to the ethical ideas? How do people process this radical procedure? I'm telling you, man, this show had so many good ideas, maybe too many good ideas, but the fact that it had all those ideas, plus it's funny, plus it's interesting, hard sci-fi, I mean, it's really good, man. I need the third season and fourth season to go four seasons to stick the landing so that Al could be happy. But right now, I'm very happy to be on the journey. Honestly, it feels like I'm reading a book and I'm in like chapter 6 and I just haven't gotten to the end of the book. And that's okay, but I just need it to stick the landing because it is so good so far.
That's my point exactly, is that I feel like we're in the middle of it right now. And so we just need to see where it's going. And I'm excited.
So it was in 2022. Oh, I don't know if it came out in 22.
You're right. It did. Yeah.
Because what happened was I quit my previous job in August 2022. And I was in a real bad way. And I had nothing to do but watch TV. But luckily, I hadn't seen much TV for a while. So I got to all at once watch the first season of Severance, the first season of The Bear, and the first season of Andor. And those three together and some of, like, all some of the best TV that's been on recently.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Did wonders for my mood. But in the years since, the second, third season of The Bear.
The second season of The Bear was good, though.
Compared to the first. I'm talking about slow downward trajectory.
Yeah.
And the next season of Andor is finally coming out soon. And what I'm worried about is that we no longer know how to make great TV great for subsequent seasons. And honestly, that tracks with what I know about the way TV shows are made nowadays, because no one will even give a slight indication that there's going to be a 5-series run of something, because it's just as much harder. You don't have the same kind of flagship network TV shows that you used to. So like, yes, you know, something like Seinfeld or Star Trek, you know, this is going to run for years and years and years, and you just don't know that anymore. And I'm worried that people have just got into the habit of working really, really, really hard on the first season of a TV show. And then, I mean, it's just difficult second album syndrome, right? You'd spend 5 years writing your first season of a TV show so that it gets picked up, and then you've got 1 year to write the second one. And I don't know what to say to these guys, because on the one hand, you don't want to say that every time you want to write something that you have a hope in selling, you need to have a 7-season arc mm-hmm. plotted out just so that on the off chance it gets made, you're going to be able to stick the landing. But on the other hand, if you don't do that, if you do manage to get something picked up, then you know, you're going to at best really, really struggle to get your subsequent seasons where they need to go.
That's a lot of work for free. Like Dan Erickson, this was his first thing that he's ever had produced. I think he had come out of like NYU, and then I think he wrote a little bit for maybe a reality show, but this is the first real thing that he's written, and it was written as a spec script. So he wasn't even expecting it to go anywhere. And when it landed on Ben Stiller's desk, he was like, oh, this guy's great. I'd love to work with him. And I want to work on that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think you're right. That is a real problem when you've got all this time, you've got all the time in the world to write your debut novel or script or whatever. And then you're all of a sudden on the clock. And that is a real thing.
Dan Erickson did not insist on writing every episode. Maybe he's not in a position where he could insist that. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe he's just not stupid enough to offer.
Hopefully the power of Ben Stiller. I was going to say that, it seems like Apple TV Plus is insulated from some of those pressures. But I have heard of like that show Sunny being canceled after mm-hmm. one season. So just the fact that there's like a star involved. But I got to think that this is such a big deal that they'll let them make this show as long as they want.
Well, I hope they don't do that.
I think we're hoping that they have good taste in figuring out how to stop.
Correct.
I don't know that I need the severance verse. I mean, I am curious about like, it is kind of cool that they showed, you know, one of the original factories and a factory town mm-hmm. that had been decimated by this company. And like, what kind of world? They're saying that there's these all over the world. Mm-hmm. There are these, but then the picture we get and the answers we get, now I think we can very much reveal the ending. But like, you even ask if this was all about separating Gemma into different personalities, these numbers, then why are some people better at it than others? Like, you can understand why they would get Mark to do that, why they would mess with him. They still haven't portrayed clearly, like, how did Jenna get roped into doing this? Was she so miserable over her childlessness? What kind of deal, Mephistophelian deal, did she make that ended her in this? And that, you know, did they know they were going to fake her death? Is she really being held captive?
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, from the beginning, this is all unanswered.
It's right. And one of the other weird things about the history of Lou is that, if I remember rightly, they set up Lumen as like a 19th century industrialist company. And that's when it all started. So it's been around for a long time as well. And they haven't been doing severance for that long. So I feel like it really does matter to me at least what the company does in the outside world, how it makes mm-hmm. money.
Are there Gemmas everywhere? Why is Marx so unique? And if he was so unique in being able to somehow feel out her patterns, then why could he have coworkers at all? What sense does that make? Why aren't there 40 people doing this rather than just 4? Like, none of this has been answered.
My read is that they're not all Gemmas. The Gemma is the one that Mark's working on, but mm-hmm. the others are working on other people. I mean, my guess would be that they are each intimately connected with the person who they're creating consciousnesses of, and that's how they know like what feels right and what doesn't feel right.
Okay, so that's some more to reveal. Is it Irving's mom that was in there and they just decided we don't care about Irving's mom anymore?
At the end of the first season, when Dylan goes to the control room, we saw that there were the 4 in that office, but there were others. There were dozens of other names up there of severed employees. And I wondered, you know, at the end when Gemma's, he was played by, it's Robbie Benson, the Robbie Benson, when he said, you'll kill them all.
Oh, I didn't actually recognize him from his 80s stardom. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. I did, because that's how old I am. But he said, you'll kill them all. I was like, oh God, he could mean all of the dozens of innies that are still there. He could mean all of the Gemmas. That could have meant almost anything, you know, which for me, I could understand why somebody might think of that as frustrating. But for me, I thought that was really fun. I can't wait to find out what exactly he means by that.
But this gets me back to what I've been kind of trying to argue this entire episode. By the way, side note, Al, the second season of Andor is going to be the last season of Andor. So I don't think you have any kind of worries about that one. Yeah, it's only going to be a 2-season show.
Brilliant.
And I'm very excited. I'm very excited about that, for Star Wars to get back to where it needs to go. Anyway, back to this. I don't need answers. And honestly, to some of the questions, I don't want answers. What I want is a good experience that might lead, like, for example, it reminds me of like Dark City, the Alex Proyas movie. It reminds me of even like The Maltese Falcon, you know, a movie that is so confusing that you kind of don't get the answers you're looking for. Even some Charlie Kaufman stuff. Like, you don't really get the Synecdoche, New York. Like, what answers do you get there? You know, so I want the experience of going on the journey, and not necessarily, because here's the thing. Questions are always better than answers. When you get the answer to whatever question you have, you're going to nitpick it. You're going to be frustrated. It's not going to answer it the way that you want it to be answered. It's always the question that is more enticing, more interesting. And so if I can get a semblance of an answer, something that kind of gets me along the road of the answer, but the world remains mysterious, like, I don't want a spinoff about the past of this corporation, or I don't want a spinoff about what's happening in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in this world. I don't want that. I want a good story that asks good questions, that gives me a good experience, that gives me a good journey. And I'm happy with that. And I think that the over-reliance and all the Redditing and all the theories trying to find answers are kind of missing what the show is trying to do. The show will give you some answers, sure, but that's not the whole point of the show. The point of the show is the journey. It's the experience. It's going on the journey. And in life, there are many things that happen that you just do not get the full answer to. But nevertheless, it's the journey that is rewarding. That's what I want out the show.
Hard agree. That's what I started with. I absolutely love this journey. I don't know where I'm going. I do think that this show gives us some answers, but again, it raises so many interesting questions for me that I am 100% still in. I actually liked going back and finding out more about what Lumen does, you know, like having Patricia Arquette's character, having a Harmony go back to her hometown and seeing that Lumen just decimate. Once they left, that whole town was just decimated and it left them with nothing but poverty and addiction, you know, which is what a lot of these big corporations do.
It's exactly what they do. And that's a great commentary on what happens in the real world.
And they're going to have a sliding doors sort of thing, so that, you know, was she going to join the cult as a junior key representative? Was she going to become a high class prostitute and become the star of Risky Business? Who knows? they're going to explore that, the duality. Maybe she'll flip over to her other self.
Yeah, I think you might have went too far there.
Well, and where did Milchick come from? Was he also born of the same cloth as Harmony? You know, like, did they come from the same place that she and Miss Wang did?
Yes, that was a great tease, the whole little bit of racial microaggression plot about,
oh God,
here's the black version of Kira. So we could go.
Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a tiny bit. That was a huge racial microaggression plot.
What was the phrase they used? Something like these sensitively recontextualized images of...
And that is exactly... That's corporation speak.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
I'm going to do some fucked up racial shit right
yes.
now.
Yes.
That's exactly what that is. And I'm telling you, like, the subtle critiques are delightful throughout the entire show. I loved it.
Hopefully we'll get some more payoff with his character. Honestly, we could do 20 minutes on any number of characters, some of which we have not even mentioned here. I got to just throw out, so... Rickon.
Oh, Rickon.
What a wonderful character. And the fact that his, like, normal seeming wife, the main character's sister, treats him with mm-hmm. respect and love.
Yeah.
Where he's just so obviously a clown.
We don't deserve Devin.
He is so terrible of a person. He's all about that money, but he's so funny. We don't see much of him, but he's such a well drawn out three-dimensional character.
The UUR.
The new addition to this season, Miss Huang.
That book is on Apple Books, by the way. You can actually read it if you wanted to. I'm sorry.
Miss Huang, the child, which you think, like, wait, is she a robot? Is she an alien? What? Why is they keep asking, why are you a child? And I think that's one of the things that they reveal about, you know, the source of Harmony, is that Harmony was this kind of child that they get them in early. She's just a normal, mm-hmm. you know, a child with parents in the cult is the whole thing. But it makes, you know, that she's so sort of scary throughout. Yes. So I wanted to make sure we didn't end without at least mentioning those two.
Oh, and just one last thing, just as a language nerd, the language that Miss Cobell uses, that Miss Wang uses, that Milchick uses, that complicated phrasing.
Very elegant, though. Very elegant phrasing.
No, it's very elegant, but I love how it just sounds kind of old-fashioned in lots of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, just the way that their turns of phrasing delights me on one hand, but at the same time, it's also kind terrifying. Of sinister.
Yes, very terrifying.
And Milchick is kind of slapped on the wrist for using words that are too big, which, you know, kind of sounds like, well, don't get too uppity. And it's like, well, what do you want from me then? Like,
that's exactly what how I read it too. Uh-huh. That's exactly how I read it. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for chatting. Maybe we'll do a little more Severance talk in the after talk or get into some future topics. You can get that at patreon.com/prettymuchpop. So long, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.